Title to our message today is A Covenant of Salt. Covenant of Salt. Come with me to Matthew 5, please, where we'll begin. Find Jesus Christ saying here in Matthew 5, verse 13. As clear as can be, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? Is it therefore good for nothing, not to be cast out, but to be cast out, and to be trodden down under the foot of men? Then come with me to Mark 9 as we set up our discussion today. Mark 9. Verse 49. Mark 9, verse 49. For everyone shall be salted with fire. The tower, remember this selection of the wood earlier, sits not down first and counts the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it. Well, God certainly doesn't have that problem. He has sufficient to finish the house that he's begun. Verse 29. Lest haply after he has laid the foundations, not able to finish it, all that behold it began to mock him. In other words, now he can't finish what he began, so he has a problem here. Now, God is a God of intent, as I mentioned earlier, right? Now, you go on up here with me, please, to verse 24, is it? Where he tells him, oh, I think it's a prior chapter. I don't have it written down in my notes. But when he tells them, when you're selecting or building a house, he tells them the same thing, that you have to have this salt. It's almost like the nails that hold it together. You say this quality is like this. Okay, let me continue on. Saying, verse 30, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king going to make war against another king sits not down first and consults whether he's able with 10,000 to meet him that comes against him with 20,000, like playing a game of Risk. It has a whole lot of pieces on there. You're not going to go there. You're going to get slaughtered. You have to consider what you're going into. Verse 32, or else, while the other is yet a great way off, he sends an ambassador and desires conditions of peace. Now you're using wisdom. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsakes not all that he has cannot be my disciple. Boom. Salt is good. You're getting the relationship? When you've forsaken all that you've had, you've put him in number one, you've become his disciple, and now you have to be this salt-flavored disciple. And if you don't have your saltiness and you lose that savor and you don't have that appearance in terms of the quality that he wants you to have being salty, then what good are you? For it is neither fit for the land, verse 35, nor yet for the dunghill, but men cast it out. He that has ears to hear, let him hear. So what then is the Days of Unleavened Bread all about? If not to take yourself and say, wherein are my Christian qualities? Where is the salt? You know, in Job 6, come with me there, please, Job 6. It's so easy to be caught up in the cultural narrative today. And more as I read, more and more as I hear stories about things going on in society and around me, I see that truth is not a target that you can keep your eye on anymore. And you see that people make excuses for everything. They don't want to really live the truth. They don't have the strength or the salt. Job 6, verse 6, interesting way to see this. Can that which is tasteless be eaten without salt? Can society survive without salt? So is there any taste in the white of an egg? Okay, I guess not. It's rather slimy, I would think. Mark 9, come with me to Mark 9, please. (Clears throat) verse 49, which we read a little earlier. For everyone shall be salted with fire, and every sacrifice shall be salted with salt. Salt is good. We must realize, brethren, that we are to be that salt. We need to be good. You know, in Colossians 4, it tells us, let your speech be seasoned with salt. That doesn't mean take a little bit of salt on your tongue. He's trying to reach deep down inside of you in the intents of your heart and have you season your words with what comes from the middle of your heart, being that of salt. God's intent for salt was there in the very beginning. Point three, what's the spiritual intent of salt as a preservative? As a preservative, not just as an ingredient now, as a preservative. Well, salt removes water from whatever it's put on to a large degree, and it denies the destructive bacterial growth. You know, we were at Mount Vernon, which would be where George Washington lived after he was elected president, and that would be the first White House. You know, a couple weeks ago we were up there, and they fished 1.5 million herring out of the Potomac River, processed it, sent it apart, and put it in their storage in 6 weeks. 1.5 million. He had 3,000 workers on the plantation there. He was a super interesting individual, George Washington was. When he was 49, he started to have problems with his teeth. And people say, well, good, they got him a pair of false teeth. Anybody ever hear that? He had the first pair of false teeth. Well, his false teeth, I have a picture on my phone if you want to see it afterwards. Two horseshoes of lead has a spring where it was stayed open. Had all of his teeth removed. In the later years, from 49 to 62, when he died, he had problems with his teeth. At one point, they made an incision on the right cheek, about 5 or 6 inches, and they pulled out an abscess tooth. That's the way they went in. So if you ever want to know when you want to live in history, I'll give you a hint. Live on this side of modern dentistry. Good idea. Okay? So his dentures were such where they took bones of cadavers and animals, and they drilled them and put a wire through that, and then they set it in these two horseshoes of lead, then combined it with a spring. This is the best they had. This was the president of the United States. So when he would eat, you never see his pictures of him, of course, with no teeth. I mean, there would have to be renderings, I imagine. But he would put that in, and he would try to eat. And he had a comment there, because Mount Vernon wasn't really his. It was his parents, and then it went to his older brother. And then after what he went through with the war and then was elected, you know, when he was done with the war and had conquered the British in that sense, then they thought he was going to become King George Washington. Are you aware of this? All right. And but he turned around and said, I don't want to be your king. I want you to craft a democracy where everyone has a word, has a freedom, liberty for religion, speech, and all of that. And he turned around and he gave it back to him and resigned his commission. And he went to Mount Vernon, where his brother was over Mount Vernon. Then when he was elected president, then his brother died, and his sister-in-law gave him Mount Vernon. And that's how it was transferred down like that. And he had 620 visitors in this 9-room home, which is a nice home, but not anything too big. But 620 visitors the first year of his presidency. Can you imagine? I mean, that's a lot of people going in and out of your house, you know? So this man was committed down to the bone in establishing the United States. Make no mistake about it. And if you ever have a chance to go to Mount Vernon, I would suggest you go. It's very eye-opening. In fact, if you open your book to 183, the songbook, we have one of those up here. I know I'm off course right now, but it's interesting, isn't it? I hope it is. 183. I'll get back to promise this sermon in just a second. It's just I can't help sharing some of this stuff with you. It's just super interesting. Okay, 183, where we just sang that song, "O God of Every Nation," was the first one we sang. If you look at this song here, this was crafted between the time of pretty much like when you go from George Washington all the way up until Abraham Lincoln. And when it's talking about, oh, God of every nation, of every race and land, he was the president of the Bible Society, George Washington. And he is quoted as saying, that was my most important role, more important than being president of the United States. So when you look here and you see for search of wealth and power and scorn of truth and right, this is referring to how they had to leave the British Empire and how they had to go and they had to search for truth and right. When you look about trust of bombs that shower, when you look about redeeming the creation, this is all talking about the United States going as a nation after God. That's what this was all about. Just as being called out of the lumber pile means that we should be a nation that goes after God. That's where I was going with this. It's so important that you understand your election, and then once you know your election, how you are to behave as salt. It's so important to see the connection. Too much salt. Have you ever just kind of just keep telling people, yeah, but the Bible says, and they just get tired of it, and they just like, woo, tune you out, like their eyes glass over, like they get busy, I got to go. They look at their clock. They don't want any more of it. Too much salt. They can only take as much salt as they're intended to take. From Salt of World History, once again from that book, it says, the ability to preserve, to protect against decay, as well as to sustain life, has given salt a broad metaphorical importance. We associate it with longevity and permanence. Longevity and permanence. Come with me to Ezekiel 47, please. Ezekiel 47. Ezekiel 47, verse 11. But the miry places, the swamps thereof, and the marshes thereof shall not be healed. They shall be given over to salt, meaning that they will be, nothing will live there, meaning it will be sterilized. In Judges 9, let's go there. We die while we're alive, but we die as an old man. You know, the old man dies, a new man takes over when we commit, we're pulled from the lumber pile. But when he tells you that, he tells us that, he tells us that our acceptable or reasonable service for us to be living sacrifices. Here he goes now from this point forward, telling us how it is that we become the sacrifice, in other words, seasoned with salt. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you might prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. I say, through the grace given to me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to. Don't be puffed up, the whole idea of unleavened bread, but to think soberly, according to God has dealt to every man the measure of his faith. When you think you know it all, you're in trouble. It tells you here in verse 4 that we have many members in one body. There's many grains of salt, but yet we're not there for the same purposes. Some of us are going to be there to preserve. Some of us are going to be there to accentuate and taste. Some of us are going to be there to show purity. We're going to be there for different reasons, but still having the same purpose. It tells you that these gifts are different in verse 6. And then it goes on and tells you if it's of ministry, teach. If it's exhortation, exhort. If it's, you know, if you have money, then share it, you know. And then goes on here in verse 9. And let your love be without hypocrisy. You know, just flatten it out. Take that carnality and flatten it out. Abhor that which is evil. Cling to that which is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another. Honor, preferring one another. See, not taking the prideful role. Don't be slothful in business, but fervent in spirit, serving God. Rejoice in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant, urgently, always praying, whatever it might be. Distribute to the necessity of the saints. When you see people have any kind of needs, take care of it. Don't wait to be asked. Open your eyes. Your time is limited, as mine is. Verse 14, bless them which persecute you. Bless, curse not. Rejoice with them, rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Feel for other people. Be of the same mind, one toward another. Don't look for all of the differences. Look for the similarities. Mind not high things. Look for those things for the people of low estate that don't have what you have. Don't think your opinion is so important that other people can't hold up to your standard. Don't recompense other men evil for evil. Provide things honest in sight of all men. Don't be hiding. And if it's impossible, if it be possible, as much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. And if you recall, when we were back there earlier in Matthew, one of the things he said, and Luke and Mark, is that you are salt. Now, be peaceful with one another. These qualities of salt, brethren, could be found in Romans 12 and Matthew 5. And it is indeed what Jesus had in mind. What role, that's a signal for me to sit down. What role did salt play in a biblical historical sense? Salt is valuable, just as we are in the sight of God and his plan. What is the spiritual intent of salt as a seasoning? It's the opposite of leavening. It gives taste and meaning to life, but it doesn't puff up like leavening does. Explore the spiritual intent of salt as a preservative or a sterilizing agent. It's meaningful to the future use that God has in mind. What was the meaning of salt when we have an agreement? He was intending this relationship as an eternal relationship, and it indeed then would be called a covenant of salt. Pleasure being here, brethren. See you a little later.